We continue now with Sally Ann Glassman. She is a Monbo, a voodoo priestess, and she's the author of Voodoo Visions, An Encounter with Divine Mystery. You know what, something I haven't prepared you for, but I would really love to start this this part of the interview with a reading, and I have it marked there from beginning to end, and you know, you just can't say it better than it's written there on the page. So see where it says start right over there? And maybe you could read the headline. And yeah. then I have a little slash mark at the end where I'd like you to end. So, Sally, why don't you just take it away?
An art, a dance, a drumbeat, the creation of soul in the world. Money, greed, competition, and aggression are the keys to success in the United States today. Spiritual and emotional needs and the need for meaning are regarded as idealistic at best. Our religion is the economy. We worship the dollar. As nothing has inherent soul value, everything and everyone is disposable. We are taught to detach and not care about ourselves or each other. We take our lead from corporations and deny responsibility for our interconnectedness with one another. Systematically, modern corporate blind greed kills off the soul of the world. Voodoo, on the other hand, brings the world back to life, recognizes and creates soulful content. I believe humans only feel fulfilled when engaged in what John Keats called soul-making.
The planet is just a veil of soul-making, and the sooner we all realize that, the better we are, I think. And there's something else in the book that you say. You say that folks in this society are in a, quote, competitive corporate spell. Why don't you explain what you mean by that and tell us who the spellcaster is, and tell us maybe how the effort to make one's soul runs counter to the prevailing corporate agenda in America?
Well, I think really the guilty party is ourselves. We sell ourselves. We sell our souls to the corporate greed monster. Everybody wants that special job. They want that income. They want their air conditioning or whatever it is, that special car. And we sell our souls for it. I call them comfort zombies. And we destroy our ecology. We destroy each other. We could care less about what's happening to the other person because we're so desperate to get it for ourselves. All of these things are completely empty, and we know it. So we're running scared the whole time. I think that recognizing that all of these material things absolutely do nothing for us or for the world helps to turn that around. But it takes a focusing on something beyond yourself. It takes a focusing always on meaning and recognizing, even taking it step by step, day by day, and noticing that you feel better when you care about something else, when you care about somebody or make that effort to connect.
How has it changed your life? Can you give us a before and after picture of your experience with voodoo?
Well, I would say I've always been a little bit geared this way, and I always felt very peculiar in terms of society. I felt very odd, backwards, upside down, that I did everything the wrong way, and that I simply was dysfunctional. Running into voodoo and getting in line with it, getting right with the spirit, helped me to validate myself, helped me to recognize that I didn't need anybody else's opinion. I don't have to please somebody else's plan or fit in to be right with myself and to be right with the world and to be of value. It has helped me certainly to create a niche for myself and absolutely helped me to accept myself. When I was in the Kushe, which is what the initiation is called to be a Mambo, Kushe means to put to sleep. And I knew that it was going to be a descent or death experience prior to a rebirth in the light of the spirit. So I was kind of hoping I was going to get to be a completely different person at the end of this, and I could get rid of all of my irritating Jewish neuroses, and you know, I wouldn't have all these lovely personality traits that I've been dragging around for 40 years at the time. But what I discovered was that I didn't get to be somebody else. One particularly dark, long night of the soul in the Kushe, I found myself saying to spirit, this is me, this is all I've got. These are my strengths, these are my weaknesses, these are my gifts and my failings. I give it to you in service, do with me what you can, and make the most of me. And I found that that simple act of accepting myself, of agreeing to be myself, and of refocusing on service allowed me to take up my power to become a Mambo.
Wow. Were there people dying through this this event, this initiation?
No people, a few chickens. about it, unfortunately.
Well, let's talk about that. Animal sacrifice. We don't think about it, when we think about animal sacrifice in the society, how can people do that? That's disgusting, and yet we have no reverence for the animals that are slaughtered, for the way in which they're slaughtered. We see them, in a prepackaged plastic container at the supermarket, and think that's okay. But we think animal sacrifice is something horrible. Yet animal sacrifice is something you don't do.
No, I don't do it because I'm vegan and I don't go to the grocery store either and buy it in plastic containers. In Haiti, however, where animal sacrifice is part of the culture, the community does eat the animal afterwards. So in some sense, it is taking a more direct responsibility for what's actually happening when you eat an animal. I did not find that I personally could find any excuse for making an animal suffer for my needs. I'm personally just not into that. It's amazing, though, I've taken more grief for not sacrificing animals than I have for being a white Jewish woman doing voodoo.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How come?
I think it's somewhat of the same defense mechanism that happens when I go to dinner and people find out I'm vegan and suddenly start screaming at me about why I should eat meat, even though I haven't said anything about them eating meat. There's something deep in our hearts that knows that we probably shouldn't be doing this and has to defend ourselves. I think that really, as a people, we're able to progress. We're able to transform rights and get to the meaning of them without having to stick to the literacy of them. And I dare say that the first Aztec priest who suggested that they didn't really have to rip somebody's heart out for the sun to rise probably was seen as a heretic. And the first person in Europe who said we didn't have to kill the corn king for the crops to grow was a heretic. And I think eventually we can move on from here. The spirits love all kinds of offerings. And when you make an offering, what you're really doing is taking something out of the everyday world, recognizing that it's sacred, and offering it beyond yourself into the mystical or the spiritual. So each of them, in addition to having particular animal sacrifices, has vegetables and fruits and flowers and trinkets and things that they like. And they seem, so far to me, to be satisfied with that. They show up in my temple and they dance with us.
Yeah, and no one can take those offerings and go out and spend it on gin and hookers like like some Baptist priest. Not Baptist, but we hear the stories about Jimmy Swaggart and what have you. Interesting, because when I hear the word offering, my mind flashes back to when I was 9 years old in the Baptist church in Chicago, and the basket comes by and you're expected to put an envelope full of money in. But
yeah.
Offering with a significantly different meaning when we talk about voodoo.
I think that it's really a core sense in voodoo, that the worlds intersect, the spiritual and the physical world intersect one another, and that opposites are not in opposition. They interpenetrate and express each other. So everything in a voodoo ceremony is intended to go to that crossroads where the two worlds meet. An altar, for instance, is the threshold where those two worlds meet, and human prayer meets spiritual power. You want to give something material from the physical world, from the world that we're in, and pass it through the magical door at the center of the crossroads in order to draw spirit back out so the two worlds can interchange.
We're talking with Sally Ann Glassman. She is a Mambo, a voodoo priestess, and she's author of Voodoo Visions, An Encounter with Divine Mystery. You were very pleased to see our own altar here at the Northwest Spoken Word Lab.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, we're working on it. We really need to be better about that, but we have it here, and that certainly says that communicates, and that's part of the intention. In the book, you talk about the dichotomy of New Orleans, and I think this relates to what you were just talking about. The utter licentiousness and abandon on one hand juxtaposed with abiding and fundamental spirituality. Mm-hmm. How can that be? Tell us about that. And it reminds me of a William Blake quote, "The road of excess leads to the palace of wisdom."
Mm-hmm. I think it's very much that idea of not repressing who we are, and recognizing that who we are is in fact sacred, that however damaged or draggled or ruined we are, we still have spirit. We still have the divine spark within us and the flash of the spirit. So when people allow themselves to live, I think they do allow also an openness or vulnerability to intimacy with the spirit. And in New Orleans, it certainly goes overboard. And there are problems with that. It's one of the serious problems of the city. But I think that, too, is part of saying, yeah, we have faults, we have strengths. And as you move away from Bourbon Street and as you move away from the tourist centers, you begin to realize the absolute atmosphere of spirituality that pervades the city. And not just on a mystical level, but even walking through these ancient streets with their wrought iron balconies and the flowers pouring out and the perfume of the flowers and the just the heady atmosphere of it all. On a foggy night, you're liable to walk into more spirits than people as you move down the street.
Very scary proposition for a lot of folks.
Yeah.
Walking by, seeing the river above you down the street. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a scary thing. You also say in the book, sensual perception is the sacrificial fire. Tell us about that.
One of the things that I love most about voodoo is that it does not separate mind and body. We're not required to leave either of them at the door. And we find that the mind, in fact, is sensual and the body is full of intelligence. So the two work together. I believe personally that the psyche is erotic. And by erotic, I mean we feel through our thoughts, through our passions, a sense of longing for the divine, a longing to cross the abyss that separates mind and body, that separates each body from the other. And voodoo or any ecstatic religion of that sort helps you to melt the walls that divide us all.
As soon as men realize that the most important sexual organ is the brain, we'll all be better off. Huh?
Yeah, I think so. It'll be more interesting anyway.
Oh, my. All right, back to the matter at hand before we get in trouble here. Ancestor worship is central to voodoo practice, and this is something, again, missing by and large in our culture. Tell us about that.
Well, first of all, just to avoid confusion, voodoo is actually monotheistic. There is a main god called Bon Dieu. But Bon Dieu is seen as a little too vast or too aloof or abstract for humans to really comprehend. So between God and humanity are all of these ancestral spirits or intermediary deities called the Loa. And they were once living people. They've died. They've moved into what's called the waters of the abyss. And over time, as memory fails about actual details of their life, people begin to forget a few stories. They might make up a few stories or embellish some. Maybe two different people's stories get mixed together. And over time, a very charismatic person develops into one of these archetypal ancestral deities called the Loa. And they are honored because we come from somewhere. We didn't just fall on Earth and fall into this lifetime disconnected from what has come before or even disconnected from what is yet to come. We're becoming ancestors ourselves. And even within individual families, there are family Loas. So as my ex-husband used to say, it's much easier to relate to your great-grandfather than it is to relate to God. You have a sense of them, and they were once people, so we kind of know them.
Yeah, Loas, that's interesting. And maybe we should talk a little bit more about some of the different deities. You mentioned earlier the African warrior god, Ogu, who you say is the patron of the United States because of our warlike nature.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, Ogu, he's also one of the rulers of my head, so-called. And
well, you got to explain that.
Okay, each person has a particular Loa that resonates most particularly like them and is the easiest of the Loa for you to work with. And Ogu is particularly the one that I work with most closely, in addition to another one called La Sirene, which we can get into. But Ogu is the warrior. He is the master of the Iron Forge. He is involved with swords and guns and metal things, bullets, all that kind of stuff. And because the United States is so militaristic, he has become the patron Loa of the United States. He's the Loa that we called on in our street ceremonies to fight crime. I was a little alarmed or taken aback when I found out that he was the one that ruled my head. I thought that was a little brutal until I realized he's also the spiritual warrior, and I'm doing nothing if not fighting battles for the spirit to open some doors.
Yeah, I can imagine, and I seem to think that you've opened a few, certainly as a Jewish woman practicing voodoo. Why don't you tell us about that Loa you mentioned, La Sirene, is it?
La Sirene, she's very popular. She appears as a mermaid, So she's a very popular image. Like the siren song, she can lure sailors to their doom. She has a tendency to cause obsession in people. And if you see her combing her hair with her beautiful gold comb, you're liable to fall into the water to your doom. So she's a little dangerous, too. And she also has been known to steal children under the water. She takes them away with her. But when she returns them sometime later, they have special powers, usually psychic. La Sirène rules in the deep waters of the psyche and has a lot to do with the interplay between the conscious mind of the air, as the human part of her breathes the air, and with the deep waters of intuition and imagination and dreams with her fish part.
The Bawan sound to me, and if I'm mispronouncing any of this, please let me know, because I'm just taking my best shot at it. But the Bawan seem to me a lot like the trickster coyote from the North American myths. Tell us about them.
Oh, yeah. The Bawan are quite interesting. They can be quite embarrassing, too. They tend to be lascivious. They're very graphic. They have to do with sex and death and regeneration and all wrapped up into one embarrassing package. And they do like to laugh at us when we put on airs and try to hide from who we are. And they can tell jokes that are off-colored. They can tell the truth about you in public, which can be the worst, most embarrassing. And sometimes you got to pay them to go away and leave you alone. However, because they mediate between life and death, they're also who you go to in a life or death situation when a healing is essential. And they're the patron of small children. So they're seen as very solid fellows. They tell the truth. You can count on them for the truth. And you can't count on too many people for that.
Do you, how do you practice this? I mean, this is your day job, obviously, and you're hoping the book sells a million copies so you can, you know, continue to do your work in the best way. But, I mean, how do you exist in a normal materialistic sense? How do you make ends meet?
Certainly not through voodoo, and generally don't even charge for anything that I do. My partner and I, Shane Norris, have a botanica where we don't pay ourselves because we wanted the neighborhood to have an alternative to what they were seeing on TV. And there are plenty of rewards in the spirit and in the heart. So on the other hand, we have to work other jobs to make ends meet. But as far as voodoo, it is an everyday thing. It's all day, every day. You're breathing the spirit. You're bathing in it. These loa are in nature around us. They're in our lives. They're in the trees and the leaves. They say in Haiti, behind every leaf, a loa. So the world is really alive, and you have to walk with more respect, I'd say, with more care and more attention, more awareness. We also do individual rituals every day to honor the spirit around us, and it varies. It depends on what work you feel you need to do, what element is out of balance, or which particular spirit has called attention to itself and let you know that it wants something. But we also do massive group ceremonies every week to honor one of the spirits or another. And then, of course, there are particular times of the year when there are ceremonies done for many spirits.
Including the carnival time.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that was the only time I was in New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
We won't talk about that experience on the radio. also an artist, and you talk about visionary art in the book, and this is another wonderful passage that you have in here. Maybe you could read what I have underlined there on page 47. Okay. The guest is Sally Ann Glassman, and the book is Voodoo Visions, An Encounter with Divine Mystery.
Visionary art requires more than simply pushing aside the intellect and allowing a greater presence to work for you. The conscious mind must be kept available as you expand outward to meet greater forces. As the door opens, allowing an exchange between the conscious and subconscious minds, the superconscious can flood through. Opening into vision, we move beyond the circumstances of time and place into the inviolate archetypal that endures. The art that is produced reflects the crisis that fuses the abiding self with the mundane temporal self. When I am going into a vision, I find myself diving after a particular image or flow of images. There is no thought of what I hope to find, no preconceived idea of what I'm going after.
I can imagine that if your art is infused with that, it must be pretty powerful. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I do think it is powerful. It's a powerful experience for me, certainly, and healing for me. I think it can be a bit intimidating for people, and I've certainly received complaints of that sort, that even the palette that I choose, the colors and the paintings, can be threatening. I do work with pretty primal colors and very powerful images. It's my hope that the images that I create can act as containers of spirit that will expand outward in the individual that gazes at it, that it's a multidimensional experience and recognizes that the viewer is also a multidimensional being. Again, opening that crossroads so the two can exchange.
Yeah. Art needs to be more like this in the future, don't you think?
I would like it.
Yeah. Well, there'd be more of a calling for your work, but mm-hmm. it would also be a better situation in society that it would find itself in.
I think so, and I think it has the ability to heal.
Ashe to that.
Ashe.
Ashe. So if there was one last thought you wanted to leave someone with regarding voodoo, what would it be?
It would be that I hope Voodoo Visions in particular can help give transport to the spirit, can help open doors for everyone and allow the spirit to come through into their lives, and that I would wish for everyone that they can open their hearts and remember that they're children of spirit, and at the same time that we can all contribute to repairing a broken world.
Very good. It's a wonderful book. I find
Thank
it very,
very
interesting
much.
To go through, and I wish you much success with it.
Thank you so much.
Unfortunately, it's listed in the New Age / spirituality category. You can find more information on the web at random.com. The Villard Books is a division of Random House. We'll, of course, have a link on our website, which is inpeoria.org. That's inpeoria.org. Click on Northwestern Exposure or Focus for a detailed description of the book and our interview. It's been our pleasure to have Sally Ann Glassman on the program. She is a voodoo mambo, a voodoo priestess, and the author of Voodoo Visions.